No one knows the answer except me. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing, University of Philosophy, here in Campo, California, with the Absolute Philosopher. No one knows the answer except me. In the philosophy of the University of Healing, and in the philosophy of all major philosophical organizations and philosophical colleges and schools around the world, the concept is that no one knows the answer except me. We have within each one of us the answer to every question that exists. Well, if we have the answer to every question that exists, then everybody's got the answer that I have. No. Each one of us is a unique expression of a combination of ideas. We have gathered together various things that we call our background. We have gathered together various things which we call our foreground, which we call our nowness. We have gathered together these concepts, and we live in these concepts. And these concepts both bind us and reveal us. They bind us insofar as we limit ourselves to our experiences for our understanding, and they unlimit us insofar as we say to ourselves that we are the allness and we live in the now, and the only time that exists is now, and the only place that exists is here, and we are that. Now, we've been espousing this for many, many years, and this is something that the scientific community has been espousing too. In fact, we mutually gathered on these ideas about the same time, and it is proving itself out more and more. However, we have in our attitude certain ideas that we continually hold on to, even though we know they're not true. We know that if we say of ourselves that we don't know something, then we don't. If we say of ourselves that there are problems, then there are problems. If we say of ourselves that the information we have is incorrect or that this is what's going to happen, then these are the things that are going to happen. Now you say, well, sometimes those things don't happen. Well, that's true. Sometimes it appears they don't happen because we have put other causes in motion, or we have causes in motion which are more powerful or more definite than the unimportant, if you might say, the point that has less power to it, less enthusiasm to it. There is the word. The point that has less enthusiasm to it, and it brings about less results. Now, in our discussions here on the campus of the university, we have so many great thinkers. And they have thought through some of the greatest concepts that you can ever imagine. But the little concepts are the ones that give us all the tough time. They make us all wonder just what is truth, what is logic, what is understanding. And the simple little things are we the creator of our world? And if we are the creator of our world, why do we create in our world any things that are not harmonious with our thinking or our desire for ourselves? If we are the creator in our world, why do we create limitation in any way? Why don't we create ourselves independently wealthy, which is our reality? Why don't we create ourselves with bodies that are whole and perfect in every whit? Why don't we create ourselves with relationships all around us, near and far, that are absolutely faultless, absolutely beautiful, absolutely unconditionally loving? Now, those are some pretty hairy questions, aren't they? And those are some pretty definite questions that every one of us ask ourselves from time to time. And now comes another point that sort of wraps all of these questions up into one little area. And the point is, who is number one? And you say, well, I am. Yes, that's nicely said. Who is number one? If I are number one, then how could we create anybody or anything else in this world that is unlike ourselves? It sort of amuses me that we have our second chapter of the Bible of Genesis, where Adam is standing there, and he's got a fig leaf covering himself, and he's embarrassed, and God says, "Adam, where are you?" As though God, who knows everything, doesn't know where Adam is. And so Adam says, "I'm hiding in the bushes here." And he says, "Adam, why are you hiding in the bushes? God knows everything. Why does he ask such a silly question?" And Adam says, "Because I violated the rule." And God says, "What rule did you violate?" As if he didn't know. Because the fact that Adam ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, according to that concept, he then knew good and bad, and he knew that to be naked was bad. And he says, "Well, I'm naked. I'm bad." And God says, "I know you from the beginning. Nakedness is not bad. All things are good. The only things that are bad are our attitudes about them and our thoughts about these things. That's the only thing that are bad." Well, now, we have been raised on this sort of a biblical lore. We've been raised on the biblical lore saying that God is limited, that God didn't know about Adam and Eve and they're eating the apple, that God gave anything to itself, its creation, that it shouldn't do. Now, we don't do that. We don't tell children that they shouldn't do things. We tell them what they should do. We don't tell children what they can't do. We tell them what they can do. Now you say, "Well, you mean to say I shouldn't tell a child that he shouldn't eat this because it's bad for him?" And no, that's right. You shouldn't tell a child he shouldn't eat that because it's bad for him. You should tell a child to eat these other things because they're good for him. And these other things are not beneficial. It's not the matter of they're bad or good or whatever, but these things are beneficial. And we should make the things that are beneficial, the things that we are sharing with our children as desirable, desirable. But so often, father will say, "I don't like parsley," and mother says, "I love parsley. It looks so beautiful." And then that contest goes on. Am I going to love my dad or love my mom? Am I going to listen to my mom or my dad? Am I going to eat parsley or not? My goodness sakes. You see, you say, what an insignificant concept. No, the concept is as big as the universe. Am I going to believe my one role model or my other role model? Who is the role model in you and in me? Is the role model in us the role model of a God who is limited? Of a God who cares when a sparrow falls? Of a God who is a God of love to the world, that he gave somebody to the world to die for the sins of other people? What a silly thing. God, if God gave a being to the world like Jesus, God gave this being to the world that it might show the way of being, living in the dynamic expression of who and what we are, of being the number one being that we are. Certainly, Jesus was the number one being, and certainly many of the great philosophers and great teachers were number one beings. They expressed that very wonderfully, and they taught us to express that very wonderfully. No one knows the answer except me to who I am. And so as I turn within myself in meditation, in prayer, in introspection, in listening to the divine within begins to reveal to me who I am. I don't listen to what other people tell me. I don't listen to what science tells me. Science is only waking up to what I already know. I can say that 100 times. Science is only waking up to what I already know. Science is only waking up to what I already know. Now, maybe I ought to wake up to what I already know and realize how much I know and how wonderful it is that I know. No one knows the answer except me. And when I realize that no one knows the answer except me, that I am the allness, the isness, the totality of all, then I will start acting like that. It's not a matter of being superior to another person or being superior to an infinite creative cause that brought all these things into being, which is me. It's not any of those things. It's just the awareness. It is done unto me according to my belief. It is done unto me according to the concept within me. I often thought that it is done unto me according to my belief. It came from the words of Jesus, but it came from the words of Proverbs. It came from the words of the great philosophy, the great thinkers throughout all time. And yet, at the same moment, they lived in a world that was dualistic, and they were captured by that world that was dualistic, just as we are. We live in a world that we think is dualistic, and we are captured by it. And instead of being captured by it, we should be revealed by it and opened by it and lifted out of it and live in such dynamic, positive, wonderful attitudes that we realize that I am number one, that I am the greatest thing in the universe, that no one knows the answer except me to anything that delights me or charms me, anything that makes me feel good. And I created every single person in this universe exactly like me. And if I see them unhappy, then I am unhappy. If I see them unfulfilled, then I am unfulfilled. If I see them with problems, then I have problems. So it's very necessary for me to get a clear picture of who and what I am. So I go to the divine in me, my divine reality, my unrevealed self, that me which is waiting to be brought forth into the expression of that all that I am. And as I go and listen to this fountain of all-knowingness, as I go and listen to this fount that no one knows the answer except me, as I listen to this answer that is me, then all is revealed to me, and all is harmony, and all is peace. And I put aside all the costumes of all the games that I played of illness or lack or limitation in any way. I put aside all those costumes, and I wear the simple, pure birthday suit of my beingness, which is pure and unadulterated, and it says, all is good and very good. And I am beautiful, and I am divine, and I am glorious. Put on your birthday suit today. Oh, you already have it on? Well, for goodness sakes, then why don't you pay attention to it? Start recognizing how perfect it is. Start recognizing that this is the ideal manifestation of our form, the ideal manifestation of who we are. I am my ideal self. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. I am ideal. I am wonderful. It's not any outer clothing that I put on that says that I'm a boy and a girl, that says that I am a man or a woman, that says that I am going to a dance or that I'm staying home to watch television or whatever. You see, it's not any of those outer limitations, the costumes that I put on. It's the real person that lies beneath them. That's who I am. And I go to this real person, and I don't have to go very far. And I go to this real person who is just my birthday suit, and I say, well, here I am. We're back to square one. Now, I know all things. I am wonderful. I am comfortable. I have an ideal spirit, mind, and body. It's whole and perfect. I have a beautiful mind that knows all the things of the universe, and I'm so happy about it. I am so fulfilled. I'm so joyous. I'm so wonderful. I'm so grand. I'm so good. Moo, boy, and you say, that's an interesting way to look at life. That's sort of a selfish way to look. No, it isn't. Because the moment you and I look at the world through our divine center, through our divine eyes, we see the world as good and very good, and where there may have been any type of a game going on, any type of an illusion, any type of a conflict of any kind, if that is not our creation, our choice at this instant or any other instant, it is not there. It just ceases to be. Because the world is our creation. The world is our reflection. The world is our revelation. And let us reveal the world not as others have revealed it, but as the divine in us reveals it to us, perfect in every light, now and forevermore. Now! Ho, ho, ho! What a wonderful way to go. You know, and that's all it takes. I'm ready for that. How about you? No one knows the answer except me, and I love it. I love you. I love you. I love you.